Welcome to the Ponder, a new podcast. We're working through the Bible one book at a time this year, and today we return to the second letter of Timothy. And you might say, why are you going to do two podcasts on 1st and 2nd Timothy? Right? I mean, these are such short books. Couldn't you have done one podcast? But I realized in my first podcast, I focused on sort of the church dynamics and leadership questions that Paul and Timothy are dealing with, which I think are really important. But I realized I kind of missed the more obvious one, and that is about mentoring and just the beautiful relationship of Paul and Timothy. And this podcast then is an invitation to reflect on mentors in your life, not just professionally, although we're going to talk about that, but ultimately spiritually. So without further ado, let's get pondering.
Butterfly in the sky, I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow.
Now you have observed my teaching, my conduct, my aim in life, my faith, my patience, my love, my steadfastness, my persecutions, and my sufferings, the things that happened to me in Antioch, Iconium, and Lystra, what persecutions I endured, yet the Lord rescued me from all of them. Indeed, all who want to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. But wicked people and imposters will go from bad to worse, deceiving others and being deceived. But as for you, continue in what you have learned and firmly believed, knowing from whom you learned it, and how from childhood you have known sacred writings that are able to instruct you for salvation through faith in Christ Jesus. All scripture is inspired by God and is useful for teaching, for reproof, for correction, and for training in righteousness, so that the person of God may be proficient, equipped for every good work.
Probably should have recorded the podcast I'm now going to record first, and recorded the podcast I recorded on 1 Timothy for 2 Timothy or something like it. In that 1 and 2 Timothy deal a lot with the realities of conflict and church structure and organization and kind of how Timothy can be an emerging leader and grow as a leader. But I want to just sort of take a step back and kind of miss something that, or just acknowledge I missed something and really should have focused on that, because that's the more important thing here in some ways. Included in the New Testament are three letters that Paul writes, not to a church, not to somebody to ask them to do something, but to a mentee of his. The two letters to Timothy and the one to Titus. And I just for a second want to celebrate this relationship of Paul to Timothy. And I want to reflect for a little bit on mentorship. In part, you could say, well, this is from a church leadership perspective that I was talking about last week and the importance of mentorships, but just really just the beauty of mentorships. And I'm curious, in your life, who have been really important mentors, people that professionally or spiritually have taken you under their wings and really kind of shown you the ropes? This is certainly something that Paul did for Timothy. And I want to think for a little bit about what made Paul a good mentor to Timothy. And we know that it was a good mentorship because the book of Acts talks about how they were together. And we also know that Paul and Timothy were writing letters together. And in some of his letters, he's mentioning kind of sending Timothy, or, you know, kind of like we heard in Thessalonians, kind of like he's interacting with Timothy and kind of sending him off, or hearing reports back from Timothy of these other congregations. So I want to think a little bit about what makes Paul a good mentor. And what I thought about is first and foremost that Paul takes an avid interest in Timothy. And I think I've met people with whom I've had like a good conversation, but that doesn't, and they're older, they maybe gave me some good advice or showed me, hey, you know, that's, you know, not the way you write like a cover letter or a resume or something. But that's not really a mentorship. I feel like for somebody to have been a good mentor to me, they have to be willing to to take time, not just once, but on a consistent basis. And really, ideally, even show an interest, like, you know, reach out and say, you know, how are things going? I know one time I was really struggling. It was right in this sort of transition time of leaving New York and coming to seminary. You know, one of my mentors, you know, really reached out to me and just really kind of was curious about how I was doing. He had heard that I wasn't doing well for my father and just some things that I had emailed him. He was just kind of worried about me. Again, when people reach out to you, that's so valuable. And I think about Paul here writing not one but two letters to Timothy. Who knows what other letters he might have actually written that we don't have for posterity's sake. But the fact that Paul was showing and expressing an interest, taking time, is something that is so beautiful. And I'm curious who in your life has taken time to help develop you. And in whose life have you taken time to really grow them? The second thing is not just about showing time, but also Paul has endured a fair amount of hardship. And this is, I think, something that's surprisingly important for a mentor. You have to have somebody who's kind of not just been there and had it made in the shade, but also has, you know, kind of gone through some adversity. Most of the times when we reach out to a mentor, it's because we're stuck. Right? Like we don't kind of know how to navigate a particular colleague, or there's a particular kind of struggle in a relationship with our parenting, with our parents, with our in-laws, or something with our spouse that we're just like, I don't know how to navigate this. And Paul is really transparent kind of with his sufferings, with his struggles. And I think if we're going to have a real relationship with a mentor, they have to be vulnerable, be willing to kind of say, yeah, like that wasn't always easy for me. It's not a great mentorship if the person is only ever like, well, I did it my way, I did it the right way, and you have to be exactly like me. I think a far better mentor is when they say, yeah, this didn't work out, or this is a hardship that we had to overcome. This was the season of my life where I really learned for the first time, you know, how to pray. Another thing that I think good mentors do is they finally entrust us. And now sometimes this is more like from afar. They tell us that we can do it. In Paul's case, he's actually saying, hey, I've come to the end, and now it's your job to take over this responsibility. And this is easier said than done. I think we've all had people that we thought were mentors, but then in that moment, they kind of just didn't like quite let go. They didn't really entrust us to carry on. And that's like, I think, a real kind of final test of a mentor, if they trust you enough to kind of let you kind of take the reins. My sense is that there might be other things that we'd want in a mentor. And again, my example here for the third point here about how mentors entrust us, sometimes they live in a different state, in a different industry, a different church, a different organization, you know, it's not maybe as relevant. But again, my sense that although there might be some other things that Paul shows us here models what it means to be a good mentor, that you take a real interest in somebody, you're vulnerable, and you not just encourage, but really entrust to them responsibility. Likewise, it might be kind of interesting to reflect on what makes a good mentee. And we don't really know what Timothy was like in his own words. I mean, he does seem to co-author some of Paul's letters. We know that. And maybe even he's the mysterious writer who claims to be Paul that scholars say isn't Paul or something. And we know that Timothy is there in the book of Acts, and Paul references him in other letters. But we don't again have him in his own words. But I think what we see in Timothy is certainly somebody who shows loyalty. He seems to be willing to kind of stick with Paul, even though Paul some seasons is really getting himself kind of in trouble or in challenge. So he's willing to be loyal. I think he's also wanting to learn. There's been many people along the way that I feel like I could have potentially mentored, but they weren't really open to that kind of insight and how we could, you know, how they could grow or what we could learn even together about a situation. I'm wondering, in your experience, what has made somebody a good mentee? What have been experiences where you have felt like, hey, I was really a, I was able to learn from somebody else. I know that recently I was talking to somebody in my church who were doing trying to do some mentoring across the generation of people of how you integrate your faith and your career. And one of the older people was able to help a younger person. And he kind of said, like, he was really encouraged by the younger person's kind of taking an interest. And even when the guy had texted him at a really strange hour, because that's what worked in his schedule, you know, the guy, like, right away got back to the potential mentor. And so, again, when you have that interest and so forth, that really works. So I'd just be curious, in your life, who have been kind of good mentees and what has made that possible? We've all been a part of mentorships that haven't worked. You know, many companies or organizations, from churches to whatever, I'm sure Rotary Club, to all sorts of, or, you know, places try to make you kind of have these. And sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. But again, what makes it bear itself? Yeah, makes it kind of beautiful and good. I want to reflect on one of the kind of forced mentoring programs in the church over the years. And not just a particular program at, you know, my congregation now, but really kind of the broadest of that is that of a godparent or of a sponsor. And technically the term is sponsor, even if the child is a child, but sometimes if there's like that child, then you might call it a godparent. And I want to talk to you about what I talk to godparents about. So somebody's going to be baptized, especially if it's a child, and they then have, you know, a sponsor or a godparent. And I call up the godparent, and I basically invite them to do three things to be a good godparent. The first is to pray for the child and their faith. The second is something I think is really strange for people, but I tell them to pray for the parents, their marriage, and to the extent it's possible to, like, on occasion, take the child so the parents can go out. And if you notice the parents are in trouble, you know, fighting a lot, to kind of ask about it and encourage them to seek counseling or talk to their pastor. And this, I've always felt bad, because if somebody, especially if they haven't been married or haven't had kids, I think they're kind of like taken aback by me saying this. But the best thing you can do for a child is to have a healthy relationship with the parents, right? I mean, obviously kids are resilient, and if there's a dysfunctional relationship, I mean, that's not helpful for kids. But yeah, I mean, a strong marriage is really foundational for kids. So I really encourage godparents to pray for the parents and their marriage as well, and to the extent possible to strengthen it. Obviously, the marriage is not the responsibility of the godparents, but to kind of pray for that relationship. The third thing I let people know about is that when it comes to kids eventually are at an age where the influence of parents becomes much more indirect. So when your children are young, obviously you have a direct influence, like get in the car, we're going X, Y, or Z, and the kid can cry and throw a hissy fit, but ultimately, you know, you're so much bigger and, you know, you have relatively all the cards and, you know, the child has to go with you. When they're 16, 17, even 15, 14, they start to, you know, it's more difficult to kind of force them to do things. And it, it just becomes like really awkward in those years. And so the influence of parents becomes much more indirect. It turns out they've done studies on faith that show the biggest predictor of adult faith is whether the parents went to church when the kids were 15 to 17, in the sense of, again, those years of indirect kind of modeling influence. And so I think in those years, though, as parents, we do want our kids to have kind of good influences. And I think this is part of the reason why parents today have their kids so involved in programs that have coaches, right, and trainers and teachers and, you know, private lesson givers, because you want your kids to be around good adults. Because, again, in those certain years, the kids are more likely to listen to other adults than they are to listen to their parents. And so I tell the godparents that you have a capacity to invest in your child, in this child's life, in a way that hopefully in those kind of teenage years, especially, that you can be one of those kind of, you know, bonus aunts or bonus uncles, as they say, a special person who can reach out to that child and kind of connect with them. You know, as it turns out, in my life, I didn't have any godparents, but I ended up having a really important confirmation mentor. So I don't want to say that if your child doesn't have good godparents, they're, you know, consigned to having bad faith or something like this. And again, many people don't practice baptism of children or, you know, so I'm not trying to say this is the be all end all, but I just thought I'd share with you a little bit about when we have godparents at the church, what I try to encourage them as a way to kind of make this not just a ceremonial kind of smile for some pictures and have some, you know, good food and cake afterwards, but how to really invite them into a lifelong relationship. I want to get down, though, to a bit deeper here and reflect with you on what a spiritual mentorship might look like. I think we know what a professional mentorship would look like, where somebody, again, teaches you the concrete skills, or more likely you learn the skills elsewhere, but you learn from a mentor the kind of the art of it, you know, knowing when to kind of have done the email, when to have given the phone call, when to have done the personal kind of, you know, stop by somebody, you know, how to dress in certain, you know, occasions, when to kind of lean in and when to kind of let it, you know, hold loosely and so forth. But what might it look like to have a spiritual mentor? This is something I think that I have probably undervalued in my life and in my ministry. Because I think there is a way in which all of us have a deep need and a deep hunger to grow spiritually, but we don't necessarily know how. I think, again, a lot of us would want to have a deeper relationship with the living Lord, but aren't quite sure how to get there. And there can be an incredible value in peer relationships, like to talk to another person who's kind of going through a similar kind of life stage, but there can also be something profound about having somebody who is of an older generation. One of, I think, the great kind of misguided efforts of the 20th century American Christian Project was ultimately youth groups. And I say this as somebody who had good memories from youth group and is happy that my children are in youth groups. But what I mean is that when a congregation's really leaned into youth group ministry, what they essentially said is that we don't want parents to be principally involved. We really want some sort of guru on the sidelines to kind of bring kids together like a Pied Piper, and that this person over here is the one who can kind of like do the magic of you know, somehow youth ministry. And we tended to actually want that person to be young and charismatic, in other words, immature. And we sort of then pulled out like the whole band of youth from the congregation. And what that did was it, yes, enabled peer-to-peer relationships, but it really severed the capacity of youth to be mentored by people who are older. And if you think about what the average 16 and 17-year-old and 15 and 14-year-old is really good at, it's having a lot of energy. It's being super pumped about things, but it's also a high capacity for catastrophizing things, right? You know, get a bad grade and now you're not going to get into college. Now you're not going to have a job. Now you're going to be homeless on the street, right? Or this boy doesn't like you. And so like no boy's ever going to like you, or, you know, whatever the kind of catastrophic logic is. And one of the great things about people who are older is that people who are older can look at a youth and can say to a youth like, oh, yeah, that's bad, but that happened to me and you're going to be fine. And what's beautiful is that if this is the parent, and this goes back to, again, the godparent thing, if this is the parent, it's really hard oftentimes within parental-child relationships, especially as we get older, to be vulnerable. Or to hear the parent's advice as advice and not like a law. Like, right, if you ask your parents what you should do, and then they tell you something and you don't like it, then you kind of feel like you're disobeying your parents. It brings up like honor and shame and guilt and all these dynamics. So it's kind of tough for your parents to be your mentors in that way. But these other adults in a congregational system can really be people whom you can go to and whom you can say, hey, like, I didn't get into the college that I really wanted to. And the person can say to you, hey, neither did I, but you know what? Like, my life turned out totally fine. Or, you know, hey, look, you know, you can always, you know, figure out the transfer. Or I knew, you know, my niece transferred into that school and this is how she did it. Or, you know, have you thought about doing this? Like, they can kind of work with you through some of those things. Or more importantly, they can kind of help take you to a spiritual level and say like, okay, well, because that happened, what, where do you think God is in all this? And what do you think God wants you to do? And I think that's the kind of level of maturity and kind of reflection that's probably not going to occur in just simply peer-to-peer kind of relationships. So it's probably going to take somebody who has lived a little bit more of life and is able to kind of be calm enough, comfortable enough in their skin to allow you and encourage you to go a little bit deeper and try to get underneath and say, okay, like this setback, Is there not just a moral to the story, but is there a movement of God for you in all of this? And so I just want to encourage you to think about in your life then, who are people that could be spiritual mentors for you? Or who are people whom you're called at this point to be a spiritual mentor to them? Again, we all need peer-to-peer relationships of people that are going through similar things because there's just something so freeing about not having to articulate, but really just express ourselves and have other people just kind of get it because they're going through something at the same time. Not to look back and be like, oh yeah, I remember when, or not to look at you like, oh, that sounds crazy. That's never going to happen to me, even though in 5 years or 10 years, they'll be in the same shoes. So I get it, the value of peer-to-peer relationships, but I think there is something beautiful about somebody who you know is kind of praying for you, is a gifted listener to you, and really takes an interest in not just you, but even your relationship and your walk with Jesus Christ. So I wanted to kind of go back and reflect a little bit more on Paul and Timothy and give praise for this mentoring, because one of the gifts of the Christian community is that it produces fictive families. It produces relationships that are greater than simply biology or even just along kind of tribal or class or racial lines. It allows us to have these relationships because they're based on the story of Jesus Christ and not our own kind of story. And then we can connect with people across generations and across experiences, as Paul and Timothy do here. And so, again, my hope would be to reflect on mentoring and mentorships and what might that mean for the Christian community you're a part of, and what might that mean for you, and how is God calling you to be a mentor or to be a mentee at this point?